Real Money Radio is brought to you today by Holland Financial. Since 1997, David Holland and his team have helped hundreds of investors plan their financial futures. Planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. Come see how simple and clear your future can be when you plan stronger. The consultation is free. Call 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Well, listen, this will be a very interesting show. We talk a lot about financial planning and retirement planning on this program. I hope that's interesting to you. And I know I'm not unique in talking about that. In fact, I think I have met my match today. I have a John Sanchez on the line, and he is a financial planner. He is CEO of Sanchez Wealth Management. They're an independent financial advisory firm in Reno, Nevada. His broker-dealer is Independent Financial Group, and he's got a whole team that works with him. He and his team manage over $140 million of client assets, 20 years of experience in the financial services field, veteran of the securities business, does a lot of work in the retirement income planning and helping people create a roadmap for retirement. Sounds real familiar to me because that's a lot of what I do. Welcome, John. Thanks for being with us.
David, it's an honor to be on your show. Yes, we have a lot of similarities. This is going to be a lot of fun.
I'm a little scared, actually. I'm in trouble here. All right, John, well, let's you and I dive right in because I know you are doing a lot of the same work I'm doing out there in Nevada. Yeah. And, you know, you're working with clients, everyday folk who have worked hard, saved hard, made sacrifices, you know, done it the old-fashioned way and have accumulated. And now they're looking at, okay, we're ready to retire, or I'm 5 years out, I'm in the red zone, I'm coming to the point where I can't make mistakes, and I am sure with your experience, you've seen people do a lot of different things. So let's start with some of the mistakes we've seen people make, and maybe let's get started there. What have you seen, and we'll see how it matches up with what I've seen.
Absolutely. I think we're going to have a lot of similarities. And again, it's a real honor to be on your show. I appreciate it. You and I have been doing this for a long time, David. And I don't care what part of the country you're in, the mistakes that most people make when it comes to retirement planning are very common. Off the top of my head, I would say the first one is they are buy and hold. Now, I'm not sure of your investment strategy, but I'm going to tell you mine. I've been doing this for so long. I'm considered a tactical portfolio manager, meaning I am constantly shifting around the underlying investments. We run about 13 different mutual fund models, and I'm constantly shifting around the underlying holdings. But one thing that makes us unique is I have the ability and don't hesitate to take my clients to cash if I start to feel that the market is going down. My indicators are showing we've got some trouble water just ahead of us. I'll shift to cash. And I think one of the biggest problems is people think, especially in their 401ks, here's my menu of mutual funds. I'm in them. And I've got to stay with them. They don't realize that they can actively manage one of their largest assets, which is the 401k, or their financial advisor just says, hey, we're going to buy this basket of securities, and we're going to hold on to them for the next 5 to 10 years. You and I both know this market is so volatile on a day-by-day basis, but I think tactical management really is where the answer is, if you have the right person doing it. But probably the number one mistake, the buy-and-hold mentality and just writing the market down and hoping that it's going to come back.
Excellent. You're right on the money, John. And I go along with a lot of what you say. And I actually, you'll love this. I had a client come in the other day and they were so happy. You know, the performance has been good. But the biggest thing that they really were excited about, they've been with us about 6 months. And they said, you know, we love that you're actually making changes.
There you go.
I said, well, wait
amazing,
a minute.
Right? You're earning your money.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that what you hired me to do? But and you'll love this. They said, well, you know, our last advisor, they put us, ready for this, they bought one mutual fund, and we put everything into it, and we held it for 5 years or 7 years, something like
there
that.
There you go.
So buy and hold, you know, you want to stay with something as long as it makes sense. But if it, you've got to, now what about making any, you spoke to being tactical. What about just overall from a strategic allocation standpoint? What do you think about as people are entering this, you know, especially all these baby boomers that are, you know, crashing on the shore of retirement, 10,000 a day. What do you say to them when they're 3 to 5, 1 to 3 years out and saying, well, what do I do? I mean, do I start moving into a more conservative posture? I know I'm going to be exiting and needing to do some different things, or do they just keep things like they are?
Well, you know, you and I both have unique challenges in that this market and this economy is so volatile. A lot of it, of course, being directed by Fed policy. And frankly, the Fed doesn't know what their policy is. So how are you and I as advisors and portfolio managers supposed to predict what the next move of the Fed is? So I try to break things down into a real simple fashion, kind of old-fashioned financial planning, the way you and I were brought up in this business, David. And so what I do when I sit down with a new client and we start talking about the retirement, and I love your term, we're in the red zone, the next 3 to 5 years is the magical retirement time period. I'll start off with old-fashioned financial planning, which is, let's work a budget. Let's see how much money you're going to have coming in. Let's see how much is going to be going out and what's going to be left over. And if you're like me, you're going to find that a lot of people have very little left over, and that's why the sooner that you and I can meet with these type of people and start planning for it, we can start making some changes. Now, a new program that I've developed over the last couple of years, because I think Wall Street has really missed out on the retirement income, right? We're told, you know, years ago when we got into this business, tell your clients they need to accumulate millions and millions of dollars, and all of a sudden they're going to start withdrawing that money. Well, that sounds great if the client has the cash flow to continue to build millions and millions. But you and I both know, especially with a buy-and-hold type of mentality, what happens? A 2008 scenario arises, sure, where the market drops 36%, and the client's taking income off of there. So it's a double hit. So this new program that I developed that we have found to be very effective is after we create the budget, what we're doing then is we're aligning fixed income to fixed expenses, variable income to variable expenses. And so what we want to try to do is match those fixed expenses, things like your mortgage, your car payment, that type of thing, with fixed income. So what are our fixed income sources for the audience? It would be something like a SPIA, a single premium immediate annuity, a pension, Social Security, those type of things. And in a perfect world, we can have basically dollar for dollar income to expenses. Then that way, if we do get into another market correction, at least we can tighten our belt. And when we're taking the income off the variable side of the equation, which is generally going to be your portfolio income, self-employment income, so on and so forth, if the income is not quite to what our expenses are, you know what, we have the ability to tighten our belt a little bit. We can't change our mortgage payment, but you know what, we can slow down going out to eat and taking vacations and things like that. So we found this to be a very effective strategy that really resonates well with the client's mind. Match those up and then fill in the blanks with the appropriate investments and income sources to meet those expenses.
Well, and I think, John, you've hit a key point that a lot of people don't get, because it's not what they've done, you know, their working careers. You want to be in a position to where you can avoid having to draw money out of a down market, out of a down portfolio to meet your basic expenses. Because, you know, if you got to pay the mortgage or you got to pay the light bill, you've got to take money out of that portfolio, whether it's up 30% or down 30%. And I like that approach. And I've got a term for it, which you may have heard this. I've been using it for a while. I don't know that I created it, but I call it voiding this dollar cost ravaging.
I love it.
Yeah. We all know dollar cost averaging. We like that when you're putting money away. But when you try to put that in reverse, it doesn't work the same. And pulling the money out of a market that's fluctuating to meet your basic expenses, it's a bad deal.
You know, I think you and I would be remiss to your audience to not remind them of a real critical financial planning calculation tool that you and I use, and that is this. If a client is up 10%, or let's just actually use a dollar amount. Let's say they have $100,000 in their IRA, and they suffer a 10% market decline. So now they've lost $10,000, their account balance is down to $90,000. To your point of dollar cost ravaging, they need to make, in their mind, they may think, oh, I only need to make 10% to get back to my 100. Mm-hmm. Where you and I both know, running the numbers, they need to make virtually 20% just to get back to that 100,000. So when we start dealing with large 401k rollovers and things like that, you get into a 30%+ market decline. You're talking the client needing to make 60% to get back to where they were, not even accounting for the monthly withdrawals that they're putting on there. So I love that term, dollar cost ravaging. You nailed it right on the head with that one.
Well, thank you, John. And you know, the thing that makes it our job a little more challenging, and of course, we both do radio programs, so we're doing our part to try to educate the consumers and everyday people who are trying to understand this. Part of our challenge is there's a lot of folks that are on radio or on television, or heaven forbid, they also write stuff in papers, and they don't really understand this themselves, and they kind of do a drive-by shooting of this topic. And what they do is they say, well, you know, and I'm sure you've seen the talking heads on television. They say, well, you know, the market goes down 20. Hey, just stick with it, stick with it, stick with it, no matter what. But that's not realistic, because what you said about having what it takes to recover, and people are pulling money out while the market's going down, and that just will destroy a portfolio. And you know, it's very, as we would say here in the South, very highfalutin of these, you know, of these folks that get on television, and they're so removed from the real world that you and I live in out on Main Street, where people need that money and they got to take it. So you've got to match up. Key point for this segment, John, and I think you and I both agree, you got to match up fixed income for fixed expenses. Now, here's the question. When do they do that? Do they wait until they retire and they need that, or should they maybe take some preemptive steps to get that ready before they make that transition?
You know what I found in my practice, David, is I like to take the preemptive steps, and I'll tell you why. Because when a client enters retirement, right, it's such a transition, such a change in their life. One thing that I'll always ask a client, and us men tend to be the worst, someone will get an early offer to retire early, a golden parachute package. First question I ask that man usually is, look at what, and the reason I say the men, because we're the ones with the egos, the women are the smart ones, is, are you mentally ready to retire? And I've literally had people that, David, that have had the offer to walk out with almost $1 million, but they're early in their career, in their 50s, and they go, no, mentally I'm not ready. And I've actually had men start crying in front of me. So you have to be mentally ready to retire. So I like to take the preemptive steps. The sooner someone can come to me and say, look, I'm thinking of retiring at, I don't care if it's 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, the earlier I can start working with them and planning, the better off we can be, because when they do hit that retirement time period, again, the world's just, it's thrown into chaos, right? Us men, we all of a sudden, we don't feel wanted, we don't feel needed. You know, we've gone from managing people and factories and offices and so on and so forth to now, especially if the wife is still working, honey, what's for dinner tonight? Did you get the laundry done? And I've seen, as you have, men just go through this state of depression because they're not feeling wanted anymore. So then you throw into them, look at, you know, this portfolio we crafted 5 years ago. Well, we got to change the whole thing. The whole thing doesn't work anymore. We need to make all these dramatic changes. That just throws them into another loop. So whenever I can, I want to try to keep that portfolio as similar post-retirement as I can pre-retirement, just to kind of keep everybody on the even keel. Can't always do that, but that is obviously the goal.
Yeah, it's not going to work if everybody's pulling their hair out. Well, you know, I agree with all that, John, and just to kind of take the point one step further, and I will agree with you, and we'll pick on men a little bit, because it's hard. You know, you get used to that role that you take, especially when it comes to the finances. We still have, and it's changing a lot, which is wonderful, both partners in the relationship getting more involved, but we still have, especially if the, you know, the IRA or the 401k or whatever it is, was the husband's, and it's been concentrated perhaps in a company they work for, or they participated in buying the stock, and they're attached to it emotionally. I've run into that as a bit of a challenge, because, you know, and they say, well, it's always done well, it's going up, and you know, if I just sit tight, there's no, you know, we'll be in a wonderful position. I like to remind people of the Enron.
There you go. I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah, meltdown. But it's, you know, it's hard still, because it's what they know, and you and I are asking them to make changes that require them to accept the fact that what they had may have been great in the past, but going forward with this transition may no longer be the best fit. And I've seen it with women as well. I've seen it for people who have worked for a company, especially, that they have difficulty.
Yes. You know, a story stands out in my mind I'll share with you very, very quickly. I got my career started in Southern California in a town called Bakersfield. Bakersfield is where a lot of the major oil producers, the Chevrons and so on and so forth of the world, reside. So a lot of my clients at that point were oil field, all the way from the oil field worker to the oil field executive. And one guy, David, stands out in my mind. That exact scenario you laid out to the T happened. He was ready to retire. About half of his 401k was in Chevron stock. And I said, look, this isn't smart. You need to diversify. And he looked at me with tears dribbling down his face, and he said, John, this stock put my kids through college. This stock allowed my wife and I to buy our first house. And he went through all of these life events all because of that stock. And what I found is, okay, let's not do the whole, get rid of all of it. Let's maybe let you keep 5% of your portfolio in this stock. And he seemed to be fine with that. But that one always stands out. And man, you're so correct on that. It's an emotional attachment. And you and I both know emotions and money don't mix.
No, they don't. They can really create problems. If you're just joining us, John Sanchez is on the line with me, CEO of Sanchez Wealth Management. Let me give you a website. You'd like to know more about John, SanchezWealthManagement.com. We'll grab a quick break and come back to the Love Fest. Stay right there.
Where can you find more spin than in politics? If you said financial services, you'd be correct. Ask a stockbroker how you should invest your money, and what do you think he'll say? Ask an insurance agent the same question, and what do you think you'll hear? Unfortunately, when an advisor is limited in what he can offer, he is often understandably biased. You'll need to ask questions. Ask advisors what products and services they can and can't offer. Ask about their licensing and credentials. Remain skeptical. This public service has been brought to you by Holland Financial. We want to help you plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And welcome back. John Sanchez on the line with me, 20-year veteran of the financial services industry, CEO of Sanchez Wealth Management, and that is the website as well, sanchezwealthmanagement.com. And that emotional attachment, John, that's a big one, and I have a story I will share with you as well, and I wrote about it in my book, and it was a gentleman who, this back, you know, we all remember the 2008, but then we go back further. Of course, you and I lived through the 2000 through 2002, and we had a lot of technology stocks, of course, that were all caught up in that, and they ran up, and then they took a big hit. And I watched a guy, he had put $80,000 in his 401k. He put all of it into one technology company. It grew from the first half is a great story. The second half is not so good. 80,000 went all the way up to 1.4 million.
Oh my God.
Not when he got out, not when he came to see me. Came to see me when it was on its way down. It had come all the way down, $500,000-$600,000. Now you and I would see, you put in 80, it's worth 560. That's a $480,000 gain. That's not what he saw. And so I finally got him out, convinced him to do what you had mentioned earlier. You know, let's diversify. You're ready to retire. And he got out at $480,000, I think it was, and was able to turn that into a retirement source of income. If he had ridden the stock all the way down, it'd be worth $2,000 today.
Oh.
So, and now it's very easy for us to retell these stories, but to the person who's holding that stock, it's just so hard because they've got it. And one of the things, you know, for our listeners out there, John, if there's somebody listening to us here talking about this, the question I ask people is, okay, let's say that you have 300 or 400 or 100,000, doesn't matter the dollar amount. Let's say it's $100,000 in one stock. Okay, let's pretend you don't have that $100,000 that stock and you've got $100,000 in cash. Would you put all $100,000 cash into that one stock? And you know what the answer is every time?
Oh, absolutely not.
Right. But yeah, it's because it's already there and there's that attachment. So welcome to the world of financial planning. It does include counseling, right? Right, John?
Yeah, about 95% of our time in down markets. That's right. We turn into psychiatrists.
Well, and so I think that for people to understand what you and I are working with, it's that, you know, the upside potential of that stock continuing to grow or to do whatever you hope it will do is great and is good, but not as bad as the downside.
Right, right. The human emotion, I mean, you've seen the studies, I've seen the studies. Human emotion is loss avoidance. But yet in real life, so in other words, if you do a survey of investors, you ask them, look, you have the potential to gain 10% on a stock, but that same stock could lose you 30%, or you can go into a stock that can make you 5%, with just a couple percent on the downside, they would choose the latter. I've seen study after study as you have. So, but in real life, like you said, here comes that nasty G word, right? Greed. Greed steps into play. I know the stock's going to go higher. It goes higher, higher. Oh, it's going to go even higher, so we get greedy. Pigs get fat, hawks get slaughtered, as the old saying on Wall Street. And then before you know it, they fall asleep at the wheel, they go on vacation, and all of a sudden that stock now goes negative. Then we get into the next emotional state, which is denial. So, oh, you know, I had this nice profit, but geez, I know this company's going to do great. I'm just going to hang on a little bit longer. Here comes another 5, another 10, another 20% decline, and before you know it, they're down 50%. Try to convince someone to get out of a stock when they're down 50% to save what's left. It's virtually impossible. So it's such an emotional, psychological game.
Well, come on, John. It's only a paper loss.
Yeah, right.
Hey, you know, I thought of something funny, and I'm going to start saying it. Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered, investors get turned into pork bellies because...
Ah, nice.
I mean, it's really, they do get really hammered when these things happen, and part of the challenge, of course, is there are those out there that financial folk that will always say, you know, accumulate. They never make that transition to, you know what, it's time to start backing down your risk level. You can't keep the pedal to the metal forever, but it's all part of that psychology. And the other thing about for folks that are having a hard time letting go of a company stock that they work for, here's a reality check. I get it that people feel like they're in the know because they work for the company, right? And of course, all the Enron employees certainly thought they were in the know, and they lost their 401ks and their jobs and everything, and nobody knew what was coming. It was this massive fraud by Enron. But a legitimate company, you know more than the average investor does about because you work for that company. But when you leave the company, are you going to know as much as you did before?
No, sir.
No. So, you know, which is it? You can't have it both ways. You know, okay, if you're an insider when you retire, you're not. I mean, if you think the stock's going to do well because you know what's going on, okay, well, then when you aren't, you don't. I mean,
Well, let's remind everybody of things that have turned our industry upside down over the last few years, David, and that's Sarbanes-Oxley Act as well as Dodd-Frank. If you think the old days of, like you mentioned, that dot-com era when everybody kind of had the inside know, those things pretty much are gone. I mean, does insider trading still exist? Absolutely, but absolutely not as prevalent as it used to be. Because you got to remember, any corporate officer has to personally guarantee when they sign off on a financial statement that those financial statements are accurate. If not, they can literally go to prison for falsifying that data. You think that they're going to tell? You think a senior level executive is going to tell a low level manager, "Hey, you know, you need to hang on to your stock because we've got a great earnings call that's going to be coming up in a couple of weeks." There, anybody in their right mind is not going to take that chance. So, to think that you're in the know as an employee 9 times out of 10. You may think so, but in reality, you're not.
100% agree. And, you know, we look around us and we see where things are, John, and we say, okay, well, what, you know, what to do? You know, we've got a lot of challenges around the world, all this geopolitical junk. And I thought of a bumper sticker the other day, and this is going to be a little smart alecky, bear with me, ladies and gentlemen, but I thought of a bumper sticker, and I probably won't do it because I don't want it on my car. I don't want anybody keying my car, but it would say, "The world's falling apart, but you got free healthcare." I mean, you know, we've got some serious stuff happening, as you know.
Yeah.
So the question I want, we'll grab another quick break, come back with John. I want to kind of teeing him up here. What do we do in 2014 if you're about to retire? What do you do? Stay right there. We'll be right back with John Sanchez.
Have you considered an annuity as part of your retirement plan? Did you know that over the past 10 years, Americans put a staggering $2.3 trillion into annuities? Despite their popularity, many people are unsure about annuities. Why? Because annuities have been attacked for decades by financial folks who offer competing products or services. A lot of money is at stake. So you can imagine that financial firms who only offer investments don't want you to consider an annuity. Get the facts. Call Holland Financial to get your free copy of Annuities as Part of Your Retirement Plan. This booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities, as well as straightforward information about their costs, features, safety, and income potential. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. John Sanchez is on the line with me, and he's ready to answer my $10 billion question, which was, what to do? You're about to retire. You're thinking about it. You're done. Maybe you've just had your fill. Maybe you got an inheritance. Maybe you got a bonus. Maybe you've decided it's time. Maybe you're being downsized, right-sized, pink-slipped. Whatever the case is, it's 2014. John, what do you think?
Well, we go back to the basics, David, as we talked about at the beginning of the interview. We start with a budget. We then match up our expenses to our income. And once we know that, now we got to focus on the portfolio allocation side of things. This is an environment, as you just so correctly said, that is so volatile due to the geopolitical tensions, whether we're talking Ukraine, Russia, whether we're talking the Middle East, or any place else that may flare up. So this is, again, where the importance of tactical management comes into place. So you need to match, of course, with the risk tolerance and your goals. I mean, this is where a great financial advisor such as yourself is going to come into play, where you can learn what's going on in this person's life and what the goals they're trying to achieve are all about. Then design a portfolio. And then the most important thing, go live your life. Go live this next new chapter and leave the day-to-day headaches and, as I call it, the gray hairs being produced to your financial advisor. That's what you're paying them to do.
You're darn right.
That's why it's so important.
I tell everybody it's it's our job. They've made the tough call. They are ready to do it. We'll do the work. We'll do the planning. We'll get them to work with us and understand what we're trying to show them to do. And then we'll get the fluorescent tan. They go out there and get the real tan. And you know, the other thing, which I wanted to be kind of funny here, and I'll just, as a final thing for us to kind of end with, you know, they're ready to make that transition and they understand everything we recommend to them, John. We've given them a sound plan. We need to do this. We need to do that. Your 401k. We need to do all these things. And then we're all done. We've got it all figured out. And then it's a matter of now pulling the trigger.
Right.
And then the client that has chosen you or chosen me to help them with their financial future says, okay, now all you got to do is just wait till, let's just wait for the market to come on up a little bit and we'll cash in and we'll be able to go forward.
Right, right.
You know, but and I say that because whenever anybody is ready to make that change and you're ready to move forward, just do it. Borrow from Nike and just do it. Don't sit there and wait, because that day that you are ready to pull the trigger could be the height of the stock market for the next 10 years.
Exactly, exactly. And I'll give you a true confession. I deal with that every day with myself. For example, when a new client comes in, and I just dealt with it this morning. I just traded a couple $1 million this morning. New assets came in, and you sit there and you look at this portfolio. And it was a really good stock portfolio, but it wasn't commensurate with the client's risk. So I wanted to move into one of my mutual fund models. And you sit there and you start asking yourself, well, geez, they got Apple in here and Bank of America. And these are pretty good companies. And what you said is exactly, even being in this business 23 years, still goes through my mind, which is you don't know what today is, right? Today could be the height of the price of Bank of America or Apple or anything else that's in the portfolio. So stick to your plan and monitor and implement. But that is the absolute key, is just implement it and move forward and start living your life.
Amen to that, John. You know, and for those folks out there that are watching and waiting, well, hey, Apple's going to release this or they're going to do that, and, you know, I'll wait for this and I'll wait for that. And the thing to remind everybody, let's go in our time machine. Nokia, BlackBerry, Palm Pilot. Apple came out and ate their lunch, told them what to bring the lunch so they could eat it, okay? Who says that somebody can't do that to Apple?
Of course.
Nobody can say that. I mean, somebody could come out, you know, 6 months from now with a wristwatch that puts a holographic image and it's in the palm of your hand and you talk to it and it's a whole nother level of technology. Now,
absolutely.
You know, I mean, these things can come, and so you don't plan and depend on things being on the same trajectory and playing out as they have in the past. We just don't know, so you've got to take that precautionary step that John's talked about.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more, my friend.
All right, John. Well, I'm glad you and I got a chance to compare notes, and it was an excellent interview, and I will love to be on your program.
We'll
set that up. And ladies and gentlemen, John Sanchez, CEO of Sanchez Wealth Management, has been our guest. We didn't even get to the three pillars of life, which John wrote that book, and it's a blueprint for structuring your personal financial business life. And you can get more information at sanchezwealthmanagement.com. We'll talk again soon, John.
Thank you, David. Have a great weekend.
Thanks.
Great job. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.